Even the happy moments in life can be emotionally wrought. Take graduation, for instance. This milestone you've been working toward for years and years is finally within sight. But now that it's here, maybe you're not sure how you feel about it. After all, it means saying some goodbyes, taking on a new identity, new responsibilities. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome to Central Standard. This morning, we'll check in with psychologist Bruce Leese about the emotional terrain of graduation season for the graduates and for their parents. It's time for pomp and circumstance, right after this news. We just had one of those perfect weekends that takes me back to that time during the school year when long dormant campus lawns would suddenly fill with students playing frisbee or studying in the shade. That means it's almost time for summer break for the freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. What about the seniors? Well, for them, it's almost time for quote-unquote real life. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and with me today is psychologist Bruce Leese, who's going to help us understand the emotions that get stirred up during the rite of passage known as graduation. We're going to do that also with some help from David Bowie, as you just heard. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning. That was great. I love that.
Turn and face the strange changes. What's so strange about these changes?
Well, there are so many things that happen when people finish one thing and go on to another, if it's a big kind of life change. But I can't think of any really bigger than going from the security of home to a place that you don't know, to things you're not familiar with as you go from high school to college, and then from college where it becomes secure after 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 years.
Well, graduation really is multiple changes, too. I mean, if you think about it, it's not just you might go from one job to another, but you're still essentially going to have every other aspect of your identity remain the same in that kind of a transition. This is a transition where really everything is up in the air, isn't it?
Yeah. If you are in high school, you are so well padded generally by parents who make sure your needs are met. And then to leave that kind of security and move on is a very, very, very big change.
Some of our listeners might be aghast at even the suggestion that emotions other than happiness could be at play for graduates this time of year. What are some of the emotions other than happiness? Because, of course, people are happy.
Well, I think it's rare these days that somebody gets interviewed before they leave school and have a job lined up and know that they're gonna be secure and that there's gonna be a place to go. So, emotions that come with that kind of lack of knowledge, could be anything: anxiety, great worry, even depression. So, all kinds of worry related things can go on in somebody who just doesn't know what the future holds.
High school graduation and college graduation are incredibly different kinds of transitions.
Yes.
In some ways. So from a psychological standpoint, what are the main differences for the graduates themselves?
I think that going from an environment in high school, usually living with your parents, where they actually tell you the rules. They say, this is what time you're supposed to be home. This is what you're supposed to wear to school if your parents do that. This is how you're going to get to school. You're going to do your homework. That kind of move into college where there are no rule makers that watch whether you eat too much. Kids gain a lot of weight in college because nobody says, dinner's on the table. It's this long line of food you can grab. So the quantity of food you can eat, the amount of alcohol that's available, regardless of your age, and even though the law's against it. So those changes are huge. That jump into total ambiguity. What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to be? Who are these people from all over the country? How am I supposed to interact with them? So that move from high school to college is one kind of move. And then you use the term real life, moving from college to no longer, you're not supposed to rely on, even though 36% of people between 18 and 31 end up living with their parents after they graduate.
It's a pretty staggering number.
It's a staggering number, but people think before they graduate, I'm not supposed to move in with mom and dad. I'm supposed to be on my own. So that's a whole different kind of scare. One goes from structure to no structure, and the other one goes from that no or less structure to now your life is supposed to be structured.
This word, this phrase, supposed to, I wonder if it's a key to helping us understand maybe how to get a grasp on some of this stuff. This idea that there's something you're supposed to be doing, does that weigh heavily on people?
Oh, that's such a good point, Gina. It is huge. You are supposed to go off to college and you are supposed to do well and you're supposed to know what you want to do with your life. They say you're supposed to, but most people really don't. And then you're supposed to get a job afterwards and be self-sufficient. So, that word weighs heavy on a lot of people, I believe.
My recollection from this time in my own life, especially the college graduation, was that the identity piece of it was sort of the most stressful because I had been accustomed to being a student. I had been that my whole life, as long back as I could remember. And then the idea that, and you gain some confidence as you do something. So going from being sort of at the height of my studenthood to going into a world where not only did I not know what I was going to be, but I was going to be at the very beginning of it, whatever it was. That whole idea of being, I don't know, unattached to your previous identity.
Oh, that's really a good point. You know, in high school, I'll just randomly rattle off some things that can be your identity. You can be the most popular. You can be the smartest. You can be in chess club. You can be the quarterback of the team. You can be a cheerleader. Chances are when you get to college, chances are you will be none of those things. You certainly will be none of those things right off the bat. And that's a shocker. I've had, I not only see people go from high school to college, but then I see them go from college to graduate school or to medical school or even to law school. And a lot of people who go into especially the professional schools feel like they're some kind of like they're an imposter. They have the imposter syndrome. They may have been the smartest person in their high school and all of a sudden or college, and then all of a sudden they're surrounded by people who were all the best where they were. So that those transitions are jarring.
Could you talk a little bit about this phrase imposter syndrome, because I like the sound of it?
Yeah. An imposter syndrome is when we are provided with an opportunity that we're told, oh, you'll do well in this. That's why we hired you, or that's why we recruited you. You're told that. But this little voice in your head says, no way, I'm not prepared. They're all better than me. I can't do that. So it is that very kind of feeling of being an imposter.
So that sense of like when you're a kid and you play dress up and you put on like a doctor's outfit or something. And then the idea that at some point you just have to put on the outfit and make it real.
Yeah, I could even relate it. I can relate it to anything new, really new, that's really a challenge. I've been doing this with you guys for a few years, but the first time they said, sure, come on, we'd like you to talk about whatever. And I got here and I thought, do I know anything? Is there anything I can say on air that would matter to anyone? Or am I just an imposter?
You're not an imposter, Bruce Lees. I assure
you.
Well, we haven't reached graduation yet. And for a lot of kids, I would think it would be the weeks leading up to graduation that would be filled maybe with the height of anxiety. I remember having a lot of trouble focusing on the business of finishing that last little bit of work. And I also remember seeing some classmates engage in what looked a whole lot like self-sabotage. Is that a danger right now in the time that we're in, early May?
A danger for kids nearing the end of school is definitely, I want to say all these things, wild, unbridled partying. I mean, there's a chance that near the end people will go nuts, to be really blunt. I work on the Lawrence campus as well as the Kansas City campus of KU. And you start to see kids coming out towards the end after they've taken an exam. And it's just a different world from in the middle of the school year. There's a lot of relief. I think it might be attributable to relief and anxiety. A phrase that I think is really good for this discussion is ambivalence. You know, ambivalence is both sides. It's excitement and it's also dread. It's happy and also kind of sad, leaving and going and not knowing, but knowing that you're finished with something and you've accomplished something. A lot of ambivalence and a lot of tension around that ambivalence.
For the people going through this, it's as intense as it might feel, it's not a unique experience. There are all sorts of terms like senioritis that kind of give you, it brings home that it's absolutely normal. But at the same time, are there ways of coping with it and ways of experiencing it that can be maybe dangerous and have long-term consequences?
Well, absolutely. Senioritis, let's define that. Senioritis, I think, is the feeling of being finished, but you're really not finished. And so it can be boring, or it can be anything but a happy place to be. Or you can escape. You can try to run because I'm done. Now I can start living, really living in air quotes now. So senioritis, you know, anything that results in kind of wild, random disregard for what you really value in life is probably not going to be good.
And what about coping with those first days, weeks, months, even years right after graduation, especially years in the case of college graduation? Are people in any danger in terms of handling these things incorrectly? Or is it just sort of, you know, it is normal to fumble somewhat and to take a while to find firm footing. How do you know whether you're in quote unquote normal territory or whether you're maybe you or someone you love is entering a terrain that's unsafe and down a wrong path?
Well, I fortunately don't see a lot of people veering off, you know, the path. And, you know, there's this concept of pre-morbid adjustment or before something, pre-morbid meaning before something happens, how well you're adjusted really determines how you function after that thing has happened. Like if you get really sick, how you function before you were sick. When you're in the hospital, if you're really friendly with people, you're going to be friendly with people no matter how sick you are. If you're really kind of mopey, you're going to be mopey afterwards. So I think that after graduation, people who graduate will be more of themselves. I mean, so I don't expect great dramatic shifts. I think people who have trouble are going to have trouble after. It might just be amplified if there's a crisis. So coping skills are, you know, the order of the day. If you're struggling, good coping skills. If you're not, terrific.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman here with psychologist Bruce Lease, who's with us from the University of Kansas Medical Center. And we want to know if you or a loved one are experiencing anxiety about graduation. Give us a call at 816-235-2888 to tell us what's causing you the most stress and how you're dealing with it. The number to call again is 816-235-2888. And Bruce, I don't want to forget that parents experience changes, like big changes at this juncture too. What kinds of things do parents go through as kids graduate from high school and college? For parents, I would think that kids leaving home after high school would be the bigger adjustment.
Back to ambivalence. If things have been calm, quiet, you know, just kind of a comfortable course through high school, and kids have achieved, you know, kind of the standards for kids their age, going off to college, the primary feeling would be, you know, I'm going to miss you guys. If there's been any kind of difficulty, there's going to be some worry involved. This brings us into really interesting territory because other concepts are really important here, like how autonomous or independent has a child become through high school, and how, on the other side of the continuum, how dependent are they? So a child who is much more autonomous and can, you know, can kind of run their own life finally when they graduate, that's a kid you don't have to worry about when they go off. The parent doesn't have to worry about that kid when they go off to college. It's a kid that really has relied on their parents too much.
Well, you know, that brings up the point that not everyone matures at the same rate, even though we basically reach these academic milestones at these very specific junctures. So are there kids who are totally ready for the academic milestone, but maturity-wise just not in a place to cope with these emotional transitions?
Yeah, you know, those who might be listening who don't have kids who graduate might benefit even more from the following. You know, to the extent that children have a great balance of emotional support and discipline when they're growing up, they're going to be able to tackle the world of independence better than those who have, like, lots and lots of emotional support but not a lot of discipline. A child who has been woken up every day because they don't get up to their own alarm is going to have trouble because they've relied so much on their parents to wake them up and continue to wake them up. So when parents do a good job of teaching their kids to be strong and independent while also giving them nurturing and support, they get good self-esteem from the nurturing and support, and they get good self-discipline from their parents requiring that they engage in certain milestones like waking yourself up and bringing your own dishes to the sink and cleaning your room and volunteering to help out with chores at home.
There are all sorts of differences that make this a different scenario from one person to another. And I would think that for the parents and just for the families in general, financial means might play into that, because when you mentioned that statistic earlier about, what was it, 31%?
36%.
36% of people moving back in with their parents. Different families are able to absorb that responsibility to different degrees, and different families are able to offer their children different degrees of support as they go off to college, as they go off beyond that. And in fact, not every graduate from high school is able to go to college. So how do some of these differences play into the emotional fallout in these scenarios?
Socioeconomic status and circumstances at home do play a big role in whether or not a young person will succeed in the educational process. If they feel well supported, et cetera, they will do well. You asked about socioeconomics. In my practice, I've probably seen way more kids who are lost that come from families with means or wealth or resources, whatever you want to call them. So,
what do you think accounts for that?
If life is a challenge for a young person and they learn how to tackle the challenge, they will be extraordinarily strong adults. When we do too much for kids because we have the means to, they never really learn. There's a new construct that's been thrown around a lot, and it's grit, G-R-I-T, and it goes way back. But grit is the willing to sustain discomfort. It's having a high frustration tolerance. And if you are given everything you need as a child and not required to do anything on your own, you're not going to have grit. And so I think another word that's real common is spoiled. Somebody who's spoiled does not have grit. And somebody who has grit probably wasn't spoiled. And people who do well in the military, especially like the Navy SEALs, the Marines, they have more grit. That's what gets them through. And that's what kids need. And they get that from discipline.
Let's hear from one of our listeners. We've got Linda in Kansas City on the line. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How's it going? What do you have to share?
Well, I'm calling because my son Ryan is graduating from film school in Chicago, and he very much wants to stay on his own and stay in Chicago and get a job that will at least support his small apartment. I want to have the means to help him a little bit as he graduates until he finds a job, but my financial means are not such that I can do that, and it's hard for me because I feel like he's going to feel like a failure if he has to come home to the area again when he doesn't really want to.
Well, yeah, I put Linda on hold because that sound, and we just want to go ahead and get to Bruce's answer, but we'll go back if we need to go back to Linda.
Terrific. I will admit that my daughter graduated from film school here at University of Kansas at Lawrence, and she's actually in L.A., so I can relate to that whole thing, Linda. You know, it's a very, very, very competitive world, the world of film, and if Ryan has grit, if Ryan is willing to stick with it no matter what, he will do well, and he won't despite the fact that you don't have that much to support him as now an independent adult. I'm guessing that really won't matter if he's willing to stick with it. I'd say talk to him often and continue to tell him you can do this. I have faith in you. You've got, you know, you've stuck to things you've done before. I'm assuming all these things about Ryan, but you know, it's not necessary for parents to worry about their kids as they launch into adulthood. They won't perish from it. They will learn from it if they have learned that learning is really important.
Something that she mentioned is that she was afraid he would feel like a failure if he had to move back. And that idea that we have this cloud hanging over us, the failure cloud that could descend into a big rainstorm at any time. What do you think about that?
I love the concept of failure. I'm not one of those people that runs from it and says, oh my God, don't use that word. That's such a sour word. No, you know, I believe that unless we fail at things in life, we won't learn. So I hope I have failed at a bunch of things and learned at the fact that I didn't do them well. I think a better message to somebody, Ryan or whoever, is to say you might fail at this and then you might decide you want to do something else and we'll all be supportive of you and that will not reflect on who you are as a human being. Feel free to fail at whatever you want in the process of learning about life.
I've heard a phrase, I can't remember who said it actually. I think it might have been Steve Jobs, but I'm not sure. The fail fast, like that's his the advice.
I haven't heard that. I'm very excited about concepts that were developed by a researcher, psychologist, whose last name is Dweck, D-W-E-C-K. Sometimes people like to look this stuff up after one of these shows. But she talks about people who have performance goals versus mastery goals. People who have performance goals think, I want to do well. I want to do well. I want to do well. I want people to think I'm okay. I don't want to get a D in anything. It's focused on the ends instead of the means.
It sounds like on the reaction of others too.
Yes, thank you. That's very good. And mastery goals, on the other hand, are focused on learning and monitoring one's own progress just for the sake of the joy of doing it. So, you know, somebody who has mastery goals is more likely to maintain their work even after failures. And so, I would say, you know, if you love something like film, just master your craft and don't worry about failing once in a while. Think of all the great producers, directors, even movie person. Think of all the people who fail over and over again while they also succeed greatly at other things. Steve Jobs is a great example. He had some real failures.
I don't mean to get too personal with you here, but you're the psychologist on the radio. People would think this is a guy who's got it made. You know, along the way, did you have your own failures that could – because there's this idea that it all just comes together at once or it's not going to.
They are so crisp in my mind. Do you want to really hear one of them?
I do.
Okay, here you go. I moved into the town I live in now. I live west of Lawrence and was very excited about living there. Really liked the people around me. And they were threatening to close a road down to build a bridge. And I thought, well, you know, I'm a university professor. I can get up and argue why they shouldn't close the bridge. And I gave such a stupid, impassioned speech that was so full of boring academic stuff that when it was over, instead of everyone applauding and us getting our way, everyone just kind of grunted. When I left, I asked a dear friend, so what'd you think? And they said, oh, that was terrible. A lot of people are going to be mad at you now. And I'll never forget it. And I regret that I did a bad job, but I keep it in my mind. And I think, you know, that stuff happens.
Can we quickly talk about relationships at these graduation junctures? Because it's really not uncommon for graduates to be in fairly serious romantic relationships, either leaving high school or leaving college. How do these attachments factor into the equations for these kids?
Hundreds of different permutations. Leaving one's partner when you're 18 is, you know, it's just as painful as any other divorce, you know, where people, when I don't mean literal divorce, I mean, you know, breaking something up that you value. And it can be painful. I know that people have a lot of ambivalence about their relationships. Right now, I'm teaching primarily in graduate school and medical school. And, you know, after two, three, 4 years, they develop close relationships in school, and then they have to go off for internship or residency, and it's really, really, it's gut-wrenching. I mean, they try to leave together, etc. You know, Gina, what can be even more difficult is moving into new relationships that change your whole value system. A kid who never drank in high school can meet a bunch of friends in the dorm where, you know, the amount and how fast you can drink is the determination of whether you're cool or not. So leaving old friends and struggling to make sense of these new friends, these relationships are very, very important.
Do the relationships sometimes dictate what opportunities people do and don't take advantage of? Like if someone's going through a degree of emotional anxiety that's really serious, could they opt for the comfort of their relationships and sticking with those over going where they need to go, doing what they need to do, moving on in life?
You're asking if your friends are...
Friends or romantic relationships.
Yeah, Well, let's stick with romantic for a moment. Whether you are in high school or, you know, 70 years old pursuing a relationship, most people don't like the part of pursuit. They don't like to date. When I say online dating to somebody to ask them if they've done it, they grimace no matter how good a strategy is for meeting people. The whole thing of meeting and falling in love and developing partnerships just scares the heck out of a lot of people. So what happens for a lot of people when they move to college or what they've done in high school is the person who's nice to them, that they have a good time with, that's it. That's sealed in cement, and they want to stick with it, even if it's unhealthy.
We'll be right back after this break to hear about your feelings regarding graduation. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman with psychologist Bruce Leese, who's visiting us from KU Med, the University of Kansas Medical Center. Welcome back again, Bruce.
Thank you.
And we've been talking about graduation because although it's a really happy time in people's lives, it's a happy time for the parents whose kids have achieved something wonderful. It's a happy time for those kids who have worked toward this and it's here. But it's also a very complicated set of scenarios, a lot of transition, and a lot of things that could, for a worrying type, go wrong. Bruce, tell us a little bit about when mental health really can suffer through these experiences.
that's a particularly good question because during adolescence, there are some very serious mental disorders that are actually medical. I mean, they respond to psychotherapy, but they need medication and they need close scrutiny. So there are some things that just onset during adolescence, like in college. Schizophrenia is one of them. So, somebody who's got the predisposition to be that mentally ill might not show real symptoms until that stress of college. That could potentially bring it out. So that's one thing. The other thing is existing problems, just anxiety, depression, lack of motivation, narcissism, all that stuff, antisocial tendencies, all that stuff. If parents are protecting kids when they live at home and off they go to college, there's nobody that's going to protect them. If they have the potential to become alcoholic or drug addicted, those kinds of things really may be triggered when they're gone, and there won't be anyone to catch kids when they fall. The other thing is exposure to new and novel things like the late nights, the demands of school, the exposure to, again, drugs and alcohol. That is all a setup for some people who are predisposed to have real problems.
Can we talk about graduation for those people who may not be going on to something seen by society at large as bigger and better in the correct next step? I mean, there are students who graduate from high school who aren't going to college for a variety of reasons. What psychologically are they likely to be experiencing right now as so much of the conversation surrounding their peers is about college?
I would like to, if it was my kid who was not doing what was they were supposed to do, back to that word we used earlier.
Yeah, the quote-unquote supposed to do.
Yeah, I would expect them to be a little bit nervous or a lot nervous, a lot anxious, maybe a little bit ashamed, but not telling anyone. And I would ask them, you know, how do you feel about it? And if I heard anything negative, I would just say, you know, don't think that way. Just go out and figure out what you love and commit yourself to it. Master it. Back to that word mastery versus performance. Don't worry about performing the way society wants you to. Just master what you love and hopefully it'll pay something.
Phrases like living up to your potential are phrases I remember ringing in my ears at this juncture. Seeing yourself or someone you love fail to take advantage of real talent or opportunity is definitely frustrating, but at the same time, nobody lives up to his or her potential all at once in one fell swoop. What's the best way to negotiate this balance between wanting people to take advantage of their opportunities and yet being patient as, first of all, someone else's idea of your potential might not be correct, and also it takes time.
You know, I didn't know which phrase you were going to say when you said living up to your potential. That grunt was real.
I believe it.
I really felt a grunt deep down inside. I don't know what anyone's potential is. I still don't know what my own potential is. And I would say none of us really does. And academic tests do not tell you what your potential is. You know, there are too many factors that are unexplainable, unaccounted for. I advise people not to use that term. Yeah, that was a real grunt, and I'm glad you brought that up, and people shouldn't worry about living up to their potential.
Well, graduating seniors, are there so-called words of wisdom you are hearing from the adults in your life that you hope never to hear again? Call in to put us all on notice, 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888. Let's hear from Elizabeth in Kansas City, Kansas.
Hi, am I on the air?
You are.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I graduated last year in May, and my biggest bit of advice that nobody seems to tell you is just to be flexible and roll with the punches, because you're going to get into all sorts of weird and fun and weird opportunities, and you're going to fail at some of them, and that's okay. You just got to sort of keep going and don't worry too much about it. I think I'm 24, and as a 24-year-old, I've become somewhat successful. I feel like I've had the opportunity to use my biology degree. I've seen the world using my biology degree. I've done a lot of interesting things, and a lot of that came with the idea of, I'll just give it a try and see what happens, and if I fail, that's okay. So I think people should keep in mind, just be flexible and go with whatever happens. It's a lot of fun.
Elizabeth, did you have any experiences where you struggled to maintain that healthy attitude it sounds like you've had?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In college, I think a lot of us have the idea that I'm going to get out and I'm going to go to school and I'm going to do this and I'm going to apply by this time and I'm going to do this thing and this and this and this. And then when you get into the quote-unquote real world, it's just not like that at all. You know, I had the mentality that I should definitely do everything I can. I was going to be a lawyer because I could be a lawyer. And then I thought about it. I said, I don't really want to be a lawyer. You know, just because you can do these things doesn't mean you're going to be happy doing them. So, you know, keep in mind that whatever it is that's going to make you happy, just sort of go that way. You don't necessarily have to do what you can do. You don't have to do the highest potential. Just do something that's going to make you happy. I think that I end up being a lot happier just rolling with whatever comes my way than trying to go down a really strict path of all these deadlines and guidelines.
That is so fascinating. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. There's so much to talk about in what she just said.
Oh, yeah. I took all these notes. Be flexible and roll with the punches. Brilliant. Wonderful. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you have to do that something. From somebody who's 24 years old, Elizabeth, congratulations on having wisdom. These are kind of good rules for life no matter how old you are, whether you're 5 years old or 95 years old or even older. The sort of kind of technical term for that is adaptability. I think you may have even used that term, Elizabeth. But the willingness to accept what is and as you said, roll with it, very, very important. And then commitment to things that really matter to you, just as important.
One of the things that I noticed in Elizabeth's comments is that she seems to have already been a very, like, high-achieving, motivated person. You've mentioned motivation, too. And I wonder, for these really high achievers, if there's a special set of circumstances, because, like Elizabeth said, she had this expectation of all of the great things that she was going to continue achieving as soon as she graduated, and that maybe these high achievers have also higher expectations.
You know, just because I got my degree and all that stuff, people think of me as a high achiever. I don't think that's a very good label. I don't get excited about being seen as a high achiever. I realize, first of all, my own fallibility, and also, you know, I don't want to perform. I want to master things, like we talked about earlier. So I would hope that that's what people would aim for. And if you are a high achiever, you got to ask yourself, do you have balance in your life? That's a term we haven't brought up yet, but balance is so much a part of mental health and satisfaction with life. And balance is different for everybody. It doesn't mean you have to have, it doesn't mean you have to have a family at any particular age. It doesn't mean you have to have even a full-time job. Balance is what it is for each person individually. So I think Elizabeth, got us thinking about a lot of those things.
This idea of happiness versus sort of achievement from a really sort of crude perspective, achievement. What do you make of that? Do you think that it can be the case that this idea that you're happy today and that's good enough, that's very healthy. On the other hand, sometimes we put ourselves through kind of miserable things to achieve something down the road.
I like to distinguish between happiness and joy. I think happiness is I would rather be thought of as a joyful person than a happy person, somebody who I think there's the implication in joy that it's deeper and more sustaining. I think that if you picture in your mind's eye a graph, and in the graph achievement is going higher and higher and higher, I think happiness may go up with it to a point and then it flattens out. I think after you reach a point of achievement, whatever it is for you, that it quits being as reinforcing. It's kind of like money. If you have enough money to live, you'll be happy, maybe even joyful. More than that doesn't make you happier. So achievement, more and more and more, doesn't make you happier and happier and happier. So I think that's important for people to understand as they move from one phase of life to perhaps graduating to another phase in life.
Are you or a loved one experiencing anxiety about graduation? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 to tell us what is causing you the most stress and how you're dealing with it. The number to call again is 816-235-2888. And even if it's been years or decades since you graduated, I bet you can remember what it feels like and you can join this conversation as well. Bruce, I'm pretty interested in this idea that this supposed to idea that we've talked about before. And we've talked about how that feels for the people who are graduating. But what about their parents? Do parents struggle with their own idea of what a kid is supposed to be doing at this age, this sort of keeping up with the Joneses kind of stuff?
I think that people think of themselves in kind of all or none terms. We've used a couple concepts that I'll repeat now. There's the concept of failure and the concept of achievement. I think parents perceive themselves to some extent as either doing well or failing at parenting. And I think some parents live more vicariously through their kids' successes or achievements than they should. Feeling heartbroken because, you know, your kid studied his favorite or her favorite courses in school and then couldn't find a job and is really down in the dumps, that's normal. But hanging on every success, because I've been advisor to a team at KU, I see how some parents, even in college, can't let go of whether their kids achieved or not. And that's really pretty dysfunctional.
You know, how do you help them out of that kind of cycle?
Oh, that's a tough one. A lot of parents who are dependent on their kids for their own sense of success are really not yet open to somebody telling them they shouldn't be. It's like if you see a parent spanking a kid in the grocery store and you go over and say, don't do that, they'll probably start spanking you emotionally, like, get away from here, leave me alone, it's not your business. Going to a parent who is a helicopter parent who weighs too much how well their kids do to determine how well they do, trying to intervene there is pretty hard.
What about sort of an empty nest kind of syndrome? Is that something that parents, I think it's kind of obvious the name of the syndrome wouldn't exist if it's not something parents went through. They go through it. But is there dangerous emotional fallout for parents as this happens?
I will throw an idea out there, and boy, if this doesn't get people thinking, to the extent that you experience healthy empty nest syndrome, let's start. To the extent that you experience empty nest syndrome, you may not have prepared well for that phenomenon. In other words, two people who raise kids together and really adore each other and really do a good job of it and have fun with it really sort of can't wait for the kids to be gone because they've done a great job. They get along great. They're a very close, loving couple. And now it's time to let the kids go and visit them often, and they'll come home and have a great time. Empty nest syndrome often occurs among parents that don't have a very good bond between them. I mean, they miss the kids because the kids have been why they are close or what's kept them together in the worst case scenario.
And what would you recommend people do in terms of planning ahead for the possibility, just thinking in a healthy way about this approaching transition for themselves?
Well, if your kids are going off to college and you don't have anyone living at home anymore, some people rearrange the house. If you can't afford to remodel it, rearrange it, make it your own home. If you have the money to travel, do things you've not done before, like travel. If you don't have enough means to hop on a plane and fly somewhere and stay in a hotel, go out to a state park right here in Kansas and camp with your partner. Just enjoy the fact that you've succeeded at sending children off into adulthood and into the world.
It's the intended result of all that work.
It should be.
Let's get back to the students again, because we've just got a little time here on Central Standard today. A lot of our conversation has been about success and failure and this idea that we have set up and that expectations go these two ways. There's a lot more than just success and failure that's at stake at this moment. Like we were saying earlier in the show, it's about establishing just basic independence. What are the cornerstones of healthy early autonomy?
I think about some very practical, logistical things. I think signing one's own lease, signing papers for, registering to vote if you haven't yet done that in high school. You say cornerstones, milestones, whatever you want to call them, just doing things that adults do. I am always surprised, even though I wasn't very good at it, I'm always surprised when young people don't even know what a mortgage is or, what midterm elections are. So I would like to think that besides signing your own lease, there are also the cognitive milestones, like knowing how insurance works, and knowing how our government works and knowing what you're voting for. So those are all things that I would hope kids would aim for.
So even if there's someone willing to do some of that stuff for you, it might be psychologically beneficial, if not beneficial to your pocketbook exactly, to go ahead and take these leaps on your own.
It's so important. These are what adulthood are, these things. Being autonomous, being responsible, standing on your own two feet.
Well, what about you? What have you witnessed in your own practice that kind of has surprised you as far as transition is concerned? Because that's broadly really what we're talking about here, is more generally speaking, transition. Why is that hard for people?
Well, we, you know, our identity is kind of like the script for an actor. It tells us what we're supposed to be doing at any point in time. It tells us, you know, whether we should go to the bar at night or whether we should settle in and, you know, prepare for the next day. So schoolwork creates for us an identity. You know, I have a test coming up, so I have a test every week, so I have to get ready for that. And when that's torn away, that can be traumatic.
Our scripts, we've talked a little bit about motivation, and that's one that interests me. I think when we're talking about whether someone has the motivation to do what is necessary in a situation, can what looks to the, from the outside like a lack of motivation actually be something else?
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people who look unmotivated are scared. They're scared to take a step forward. They're scared to take risks. Some people who look, I do not like the term lazy. People strive to get control over their lives. They strive to get mastery in their lives. When people are not doing something that looks like it matters, there's a very good chance that they either think they can't or they don't. They haven't decided what matters to them. So that's how I think of motivation.
We've got Sarah in Overland Park on the line. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I was just calling in to make a comment. I'm a medical student, actually, at the Med Center in Kansas City. And when I graduated from college, I took a year off between high school and medical school. And I actually came from Nebraska. And I had some family here, but I didn't really have a whole lot of friends. And it just kind of took me a while to realize that, you know, I was making this really big, important transition. And, like, I just didn't really quite feel like myself. And it was very uncomfortable and very unnerving. And I just wanted to give some advice to people graduating from college or graduating from professional school or moving to a new place that, like, it's okay to feel that way. And you'll probably feel like that for a little bit until you kind of get in the groove and, you know, get out there and meet some people. And it's hard, especially when you're not maybe in a classroom setting anymore. And I just wish someone had told me that, like, when I was graduating college, that I might get a little anxious or, you know, not really feel like myself and not even really know why.
What year are you in?
I'm going because I'm about to graduate myself from a master's program in between my second and third year of medical school.
Oh, congratulations. Well, feel free to visit over in family medicine anytime.
Okay. Wonderful.
It's very, very, very courageous to do what Sarah did, to take time off and then go back to especially a professional school or a graduate school. It is not like going to college where it's when people hit the ground running in college, it's the first thing they're thinking is, wow, who are my roommates? Who are my dorm mates? Who's that? You know, who are those people lying out on the freshly mowed grass in front of the dormitory? There's a whole environment of people that know that it's time to meet other people. You don't get that when you go off to graduate school or when you go off to a professional school. You can move into a new town in a new place, and there aren't a bunch of people waiting to party with you. I mean, a lot of people are married already, and so it's difficult. And again, I think people who do that are courageous.
We've talked a lot today about things that, you know, put people in a good position to be a healthy graduate and a healthy entrant into this new world. What if some of these things that ideally would have happened haven't? What advice do you have for a student who perhaps didn't? We earlier talked about acquiring grit through early struggles, for example, and maybe someone has been spoiled and doesn't have grit. How can a person hearing this conversation, thinking maybe I don't have this, I don't have that, people didn't do this, that, or the other for me, I'm not in this position, what is your advice to them?
It is so helpful to sign up for responsibility and take it on well. Whether you sign up to work in a clothing store or you sign up to work in a service station or, you know, I look back on my own life. I was a chef. I was a car mechanic. I did all these things. And every single one of those activities, because I just all I wanted to do was do it right and do it well and try to enjoy it. I would advise people to dive into, it doesn't matter if you're signed up for college or graduate school or medical school, you know, dive into something, learn as much as you can, enjoy it as much as you can, enjoy the people around you. And, you know, grit is really what happens. It's a dynamic process, even though it sounds static. It's dynamic. And if you take the risks and you adhere to what you say you're going to do, you'll develop that thing we're calling grit.
We've also talked a little bit about failure and being open to failure. Do you think that to some degree failure can be a luxury, or does everyone have an equal opportunity to fail?
Well, you know, I've known people who failed by getting in serious legal trouble. I've known people who have failed who had nothing and even got in trouble, went from nothing to even less nothing. And people can bounce back. We are resilient. Everybody can afford to fail at whatever level they're functioning.
Do you have advice on sort of an internal monologue that can guide a person safely through a failure to come out, to be resilient on the other side?
If the failure is, it depends on the failure. The one I gave earlier was about doing badly in front of a big group, my whole community, my new community. I had to keep telling myself, you don't have to move out of this town. They're not going to burn your house down. You're not as terrible as you keep telling yourself you are. Yes, it was dumb, but it wasn't the end of the world. You will survive this. So anyone who does fail at something can tell themselves, I will be okay. It isn't the end of the world. I'm going to move forward.
And we shouldn't forget this is a happy occasion, graduation. Any advice how to celebrate amidst all this anxiety? How to not forget to celebrate?
A graduation is it is graduating. It is moving. It's because you have worked so hard and done so well for this extended period of time, you will be fine. And you deserve to pat yourself on the back and have a good time. How's that?
Great.
All right.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's conversation. I want to thank Bruce Lease, professor of family medicine at KU's Medical Center. Thank you, Bruce, for sharing your time.
It's my pleasure to work with you.
To listen back to today's show, go to kcur.org/Central Standard. Stay tuned on Central Standard News by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @KCURCST. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the business model of a share economy. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's it for today. Up to date is next.